Hi, and welcome to Prosody, 90.5 FM's weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. I'm Lauren Wolf, guest host of Prosody, and my guest today is the poet Barbara Dahlberg. Barbara Dahlberg has been a fine artist and craftsman her whole life. She taught art to socially and emotionally disturbed children for 9 years, and art in the Pittsburgh Public Schools for 11. She retired in 2010. A 2001 fellow with the Western Pennsylvania Writing Project, where she found her voice, she has been a poet ever since. Welcome to Prosody, Barbara.
Well, thank you. I'm thrilled to be here. I'm going to start by reading a poem. My poems are chronological. This is called Mother. They don't expect her to live after the mastectomy. She's 30 and has 5 children, the oldest 7, cared for by aunts, grandmothers, and friends. Too young to visit the hospital, we wave from the parking lot. She stands in the window. My oldest sister toilet trains me using Cheerios as the treat. Skin harvested from her stomach, stretched thin over ribs where her left breast used to be. Her arm is always swollen. My baby sister learns to cling to my mother's back to get out of the crib. Glamour in the 50s means girdles and pearls, a beauty. She wears red lipstick, starched white shirt tucked into a pencil skirt to do laundry. She sees herself as damaged. Her prosthetic breast chafes, never fits right. My father takes endless movies, a chronicle of little bodies in constant motion. My mother ducks out of every frame. We have little money, but for Christmas that year, my mother gets a piano to strengthen her arm. She plays and we all sing Rodgers and Hammerstein's Happy Talk. The scientific methods of childhood. The smell of burnt paper sticks to your clothes. When hot enough, spray cans explode. Hornets do sting more than once. They are ready when you throw the third rock. Seed pods from an unfamiliar bush can make you sick. Keep your butt down when wiggling under barbed wire. Taunt bullies from a distance. Keep fingers back when crushing army worms with bricks. Don't play with matches in closets or throw things at cars. If you dump ants on a strange mound, they will fight to the death. Teeth can crack many hard objects. Breaking glass makes a lovely sound. Tongues freeze to cold metal. We weren't very nice children, and I wasn't a very nice little girl. So maybe you got that. Oh, this is called Bite of Apple Wedged in My Throat. In the basement of our public school, I join the other Catholic kids. Through the windows, the legs of schoolmates flash as they run on the playground. We sit in a purgatory of hard benches and empty stomachs. The catechism book, spine broken, falls open to the picture of a boy with a black heart, rotted with sin. How far can the teacher's x-ray eyes see into mine? I shudder at the picture of Mary. Her bare feet crush a writhing serpent. She gazes heavenward, whites of her eyes showing. Suspended in the force field of original sin, heathens and unbaptized babies float in limbo. Really bad people burn forever. There are gradations of sin, venal, cardinal, mortal. I whisper to the shadowy bulk behind the screen in a phone booth-sized box. Worried about wasting his time, I embellish my flaws. Penance, 10 Hail Marys, and 10 Our Fathers. A whiff of incense lingers in the air. I kneel with back straight, bottom never touching the pew. Statues of bearded, long-haired men in dresses stand in niches between the gory plaster scenes from the Stations of the Cross. After months of learning to feel bad to be good, we walk down the aisle like a shrunken bridal party. 7-year-olds in suits and bow ties, stiff white organza, new shoes and veils. Just to show you what kind of little girl I was, this is called Nikki. 6 years old, winded from running, I hide in the tall grass near a trash barrel. It smells like garbage and smoke. I'm afraid to go home. The prickly grass stabs my back. I bit Nicky in the back, and I don't care. He lied, so I bit him, and it felt good. I see Nicky and his mother marching to my front door. I bit him because I knew he wouldn't fight back. He's the only kid in the neighborhood with less power than me.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Lauren Wolf, and my guest today is the poet Barbara Dahlberg. So you mentioned that your poems are chronological. Can you sort of explain what that means?
Well, the first one, my first memories are when my mom really got ill. She had, you know, breast cancer, and I can sort of remember, like, not having her there. And one aunt took care of us, and I swear she never liked me. And I remember her. And I don't know if I remember things from the movies my dad took, or I really remember it. But that was pretty significant time in my life. And we lived in a little town in northern Minnesota. And we're pretty wild. I mean, we played outside when it was 40 below, you know, and ate things we shouldn't eat and went into places we shouldn't go and broke things.
So by chronological, you mean starting with your first memories?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's very fascinating. And so then you move to your subsequent memories through each poem? That's an interesting way to think of chronologically.
Well, in my family, I'm the one that remembers everything because both my parents died. My mom died when she was 49, and my dad died when he was 60. And I remember things, so I figured I should get them down.
So you consider your poems autobiography?
Yes.
Okay, so how do you deal with autobiographical material? I mean, you can't remember everything. So what happens when you reach that point where it's like, did this happen? Did this not happen? What do I put here?
I lie. A little bit.
Yeah.
Because who's going to check on it?
I guess that's true. It's not like there's a life fact checker.
No.
Following you around. I'm interested also in this sort of dark humor in your poems. Is that something you're conscious of and that you work hard during drafting a revision to
achieve? It comes out. It comes out. And in some of my classes, when I was writing about the First Communion, they said, that's really weird. And I said, I remember it as being weird and sort of scary as a kid. So they said, well, you know, write about the weirdness, which I did.
Yeah, well, it is definitely, if you ever do go through the sacraments, they are kind of weird and scary.
Yeah, and I was so disappointed when they got rid of my indulgences. I mean, where are they? I mean, I went to all those First Fridays. They should be. Mm-hmm. I should get credit for something, but they were gone. And those saints, I mean, what happened to all those saints that weren't?
So do you find that Catholicism comes up a lot in your work?
No.
No.
Not at all. Just a couple poems.
And the Nicky poem, was that a child in the neighborhood that you were mean to?
Yes. I pulled off his devil tail, too. And he friended me on Facebook. I was so embarrassed.
Hey, that's how it is these days.
And he's real successful. I mean, he's a doctorate in Philippines, and he's... And I just felt, I've never said anything about the tail or the biting.
that's funny. Can you read us some more poems?
Sure. Dad sits on a hay bale throne. My brother, three sisters, and I lounge on our bellies at his feet. He tells us stories he's memorized of the white man in Africa, wrestling snakes, fighting cannibals, saving Jane. Dad is a softer, not-so-handsome Johnny Weissmuller. Straight, black hair, brill-creamed into a Midwest pompadour. His gray, blue eyes squint behind black-rimmed glasses as he yodels Tarzan's cry. Startled pigeons dart from the rafters. The barn is mostly empty today, lit by sparkly, dust-moted sunshafts. Faintly green, grassy-smelling hay is tacked to the ceilings in some places. Tomorrow, a crew of sweaty men, led by our dour grandfather, will unload the trucks. A huge iron claw, lowered by ropes, will grasp the bales and swing them into place. Open spaces filled with noise and activity, but today the cathedral is ours. Clever man, my dad. In the boredom and the July heat, he keeps us from the kitchen, where our mother and her mother can bond over pie crusts. He keeps us safe from the sharp-tongued Aunt Lorraine, the music teacher who hates kids. My dad knows how to laugh. A mining engineer, he intersperses his stories with details about fossils, igneous rocks, and plate tectonics. Odd, useless facts, but our inheritance just the same. This one's called Bartlesville, Oklahoma, 1980. The summer before you were born was the hottest in 100 years. With no place to go, your father and I moved into a tiny white farmhouse with his sister Jean. We overstayed our welcome by at least 2 months. The garden shriveled and burned, no matter how much I watered. Under the straw mulch lay toads, splayed and bloated with water. Locusts came and ate the few surviving plants, even flew off with my dog Buddy's food, nugget by nugget. The wind blew red grit onto every surface and into every bite we ate, sitting on webbed lawn chairs in the living room after Jean moved out, took the tables, the couch, and the TV. Before she left, Jean's dog killed Buddy. Alone in the evenings, I sat on the porch swing holding my belly, waiting for a breeze. Birds nested on top of the rotten wooden pillars. Beaks and bird bones poked from holes near the bottom. Every night I watched the taillights recede as plumes of dust followed your dad to the bar. I'd find him in the morning, face down in the dirt, somewhere between the porch steps and the open truck door. Letters home described scissor-tailed flycatchers, magical skies where stars touch the ground, the Milky Way a solid path. Your first breath, a wail. Overtaken by an urge to lick and clean your body, an animal mother, I inhale your scent, nose in your downy golden folds. A cuddler, the nurse cooed. We've got a cuddler here. And she carried you away. I dreamt of you, body tensed, poised over the chasm, too heavy for the slender branch that bowed under your weight. My hands reach and grasp empty air. You look over your shoulder one last time and laugh. That was a poem about my son, who died 10 years ago of a drug overdose. And so it was about his being pregnant and then his birth. So this is mother and son. You broke my bones with your words. When you died, there was no sense of relief, no just rewards. This is on Facebook. Your old girlfriend wanted to friend me. She was the one that taught you to hide the tracks between your toes. You were always so afraid of needles. She is married, has a blonde baby. You are dead.
If you just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Lauren Wolf, and my guest today is the poet Barbara Dahlberg. So in that poem, Bartlesville, Oklahoma, who do you envision as the speaker?
It's me.
Okay. So what's sort of the memory that's linked to that poem?
It was a very unhappy marriage. I was just trapped. I didn't know how to get out. And I was pregnant. I was in Oklahoma. My family was miles away. I was embarrassed. I didn't want to tell them. So it was pretty much just survival. And then I had my son. So it saved me in a way, you know, to have him. And I left soon after that. I got in an airplane when he was 6 months old with just him and, you know, a little diaper bag and took off and came home. So not a very happy interval in my life, but I do, like I said, I do write about about my life.
Has that become difficult at times?
A couple of years ago, a friend and I were going to do a comic book about my son, and she you know, she'd ask me questions, and I'd do the drawings, and then I'd write it, and I hit a wall after a point. I just couldn't do it. But a lot of it's, I need to get it out, and once I get it out, it heals.
Do you feel a responsibility towards the people that you're writing about then?
Responsibility in what way?
Like, what they might think or how they might interpret if you're writing about them. Do you how accurate do you have to be? That kind of responsibility.
I try to be accurate, but I also try not to hurt anybody. There are people I won't write about, and there are things I won't say. So most of it's territory that, you know, I've been over and they know. But I would never reveal any secrets. There's certain, you know.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
Yeah. I don't want to hurt anybody.
Right. The stuff that's already known. So what's sort of your process like? I'm very intrigued by how descriptive and laden with images your poems are. So do you start with an image? Is it a memory? How does that work?
It sort of wants to be written. I've started swimming the last couple of years. I was diagnosed with stage 4 cancer 4 years ago and was given 5 months to live. And I didn't die, obviously, and I'm doing pretty well. But I couldn't do anything, and I wasn't a swimmer. I'd been a runner in a former life, and I was very active. So swimming sort of became something I could do, but it's when you're swimming, it's so boring. So I write poems when I'm swimming. They just come out of me, and I don't know. When I was a teacher, I said I was having the kids write a history of their lives, and I said, write about the day you were born. And I said, you know, that's where I got the first line for, you know, the summer before you were born was the hottest in 100 years. And all of a sudden the poem came. Mm-hmm. It's just like words will just trigger images, and it sort of just comes out formed.
That's interesting. So do you end up doing a lot of revising?
No.
That's
nice. Throw things out. I throw a lot out. There's usually too much there. But I don't know what it's just sort of, I have such strong impressions and such things. Like when I dream, it's in color. And that's what comes out. I mean, it's fully formed poems. Sort of the colors are there, the sounds, the smells, the tastes.
So can you remember them while you're swimming and then you go and write them down?
Yeah.
And I feel like your poems, I know that you're new to poetry, but you still have this almost fully formed three-dimensional voice in your poems. Do you always feel like it's authentically you? Or you?
I'm an artist.
Borrow?
I'm an artist. I've been an artist since I was a little girl. I can't even remember when I wasn't making something. So the writing... when I wrote my first poem and I read it, the woman next to me started crying. She burst into tears, and I thought, wow, I'm really onto something. I mean, because art sometimes is such a long process, but with the poems, I can get it out and get it there, and I get a response. It's like being a waitress. You get your tip.
Do you feel like poetry corresponds to any of the other art you do?
Yeah, lots. My paintings are, and my drawings are incredibly detailed. And I think I've spent my whole life as a watcher and a listener, and I'm curious. And I listened, and I'll pick a line from a conversation, and pretty soon, boom. And I gather stories. Even when I was a little girl, I would remember stories that people would tell me. And that comes out, too.
So in the poems about your son, do you find that you want to inject that humor again, or it just happens naturally?
It just comes.
Because that's a way to sort of handle the subject matter.
Yeah, and I certainly have some angrier poems that I would never read to anybody.
No, you should read those.
Put them away. I mean, I had some very angry cancer poems that I don't revisit because it seems like I've moved on.
Right. Do you see yourself making a collection out of these?
I would love to do a book. So I'm working towards that.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a mentor, Leanne Norman, this year, and she was so fabulous, helping me sort things out and break bad habits. And so it's all coming together.
That's cool. It's nice when it starts to gel like that. Are there poets you like to read?
You know, I never really liked to read poetry. I love the spoken word, but I think when you read it, it's not the same as hearing someone. Then it becomes real, and because you never know intention until you hear it.
Yeah, that's true, because intention does come out through the voice a lot. Well, could you read us some more poems?
Sure. For my friend, our paths cross only at funerals now, 3 in a row 1 year. We made our horses plunge through snowbanks, laugh so hard my tears froze on my lashes. You lit a Marlboro, and we sang Dylan songs to forget the cold. The sharp smell of horse manure clung to our clothes and hair, yours much longer than mine, billowing out behind in frizzy waves. We rode bareback because you said saddles were too much trouble. I clutch a handful of mane, squeeze my knees together as we gallop through a field near Middle Road, pretending to race the cars. I can't drive down Hart's Run Road without remembering your hands, stubby fingers that could play anything with strings. We ditch biology class one day, walking backwards towards a stand of trees while the rest of the class tested pond water. We crouched in the long grass, muffled our laughter, and wondered how our moms found out. We didn't make eye contact when my stepsister's urn was too big for the hole, and your brother's funeral nearly killed us all. I forgive you for not coming to my son's. Dolores means sadness. We drove all day across the desert, rented the last room in a cheap hotel in Dolores, Colorado. Blue tub and sink, rust-stained. The no vacancy sign crackled and buzzed. The air conditioner rattled, droned, blew frigid air, so we shut it off, only to wake an hour later, each sweaty in our own trench. I vibrate in the blackness, like the neon that seeps around the edges of the torn shade, in a marriage that's hot or cold, no in-between. Okay, this is the first cancer poem. The doctor said, in a worst-case scenario, you have 5 months to live. Does that start right now? Can it start tomorrow? What about February? It only has 28 days. How does that figure in? What can I do in 5 months? Organize drawers? Say thank you? Eat everything I ever wanted? Spend money? Should I sleep? Who to tell? Is it worse to know? Maybe he said it to make me mad. Or he could be crazy. Why tell me at all? I try to visualize a healthy liver, whatever that looks like. Pink, I guess. Busy doing liver things like filtering my last Guinness, tending to the Merlot. This is the blizzard of 2010. I knew my oncologist was wrong. The worst case scenario didn't apply to me. My life would not be measured in months. Treatments were just an inconvenience. 3 planes for my sister to get here from Montana. The road shut down. 56 staples down my chest. Needles in my back. Morphine drip. Blue, cracked plastic mattress. Incessant beeping of the IV machine. Underneath it all, I knew he was wrong. The lifeline that bisected my palm didn't stop midway. I didn't realize until much later. They all thought I'd die.
So those cancer poems, when you're handling material like that, is it good to have some distance, like to know that you lived through it and then you can write about it?
I wrote it. I wrote constantly. I just did. It was just something. You know, when you're going through it, it's like an out-of-body experience. I mean, it's so bad. And I just, I didn't know when my doctor said stage 4. I thought maybe there were 10 stages, so 4 couldn't be that bad. And I honestly didn't. My son came home to take care of me. He was a Marine. And his thing was, you're not going to die. Quit whining. Don't cry. Or he'd put his hands out like a little, you know, live or die, Mom, weigh it. Quit your crying and get up. I mean, he had me out of the bed as soon as I was out of the ICU. And I don't know. I just in my mind, I wasn't a patient. I'd look at those poor people and think, those poor people. But in my mind, I was a nurse. I mean, it was.
So do you think art was instrumental in your recovery in some ways? Poetry or
yeah, and just painting? Being stubborn. I mean, I say I was too mean. I mean, I taught in the city schools for 11 years. I think I was too stubborn and committed and to give up. I mean, it just didn't enter into it. Mm-hmm. I have a couple more.
Yeah, sure. Can you read
us some
more?
Okay, this is stage 4 cancer. Sleep, wake, dreamless. I have a life, but everything is gone, changed. My torso cut and spliced imperfectly. Brain fuzzy, overexposed in a chemical bath. My body no longer bends. The reflection in the mirror is the image of a stranger. And then I've got a better one. What saves us? Let's see. Breathe in, breathe out. Reach, turn head, exhale. Breathe in, turn head, reach, stroke, exhale. Breathe in through panic, through dark, surfacing, going under, long halls, bright lights, nurses, needles, beeping machines, morphine. Breathe in, crossword puzzles, channel surfing, reality TV, oatmeal, Sudoku, chicken pot pie, chemo. Breathe in, breathe out, air cold, then warm, toads return and mate, planting, weeding, deadhead roses, count steps, laps, miles. And this was the first poem I ever read to people. It's called Mercy Hospital, April 1975. Breaths gentle, lines smoothed from her face, I knew. I eat her lunch, but not the neon green peas wrinkling in the tray. Tubes in her nostrils attached to an oxygen tank. Bags drip liquid in, bag traps yellow. My mother halved, shaft of light glints off the spoon.
Thank you. The poetry of Barbara Dahlberg. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
No, you're welcome. You've been listening to Prosody, a weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. Writers appearing on Prosody also have their work showcased in Chapter and Verse, a bi-weekly feature in Pittsburgh City Paper, the Arts Entertainment News Weekly published every Wednesday. Prosody is produced by Jan Beatty and Alan Wadey. Our sound engineers are Michelle Stoner and Lisa Alexander. Please tune in at our new time, Saturday mornings at 6:30, for Prosody, 90.5 FM.